And those who exercise authority over them are called benefactors. But not so among you. On the contrary, he who is greatest among you, let him be as the younger, and he who governs as he who serves. For who is greater, he who sits at the table or he who serves? Is it not he who sits at the table? Yet I am among you as the one who serves. Now this is a powerful, powerful portion of Scripture. And about a year ago, as I was reading devotionally, I came to this portion of Scripture. And what gripped me initially was the word dispute. And in the original language, the word dispute literally means love of victory. But the kind of victory that it's talking about is not the victory that you would have, say, on an athletic field. The victory on an athletic field is what you're supposed to do. My fourth daughter plays basketball, and one of the things I teach her and the other girls that I have the privilege of helping out with is they're to walk humbly before the Lord. They're to seek Him. They're to play unto Him and practice unto Him. But when they get on that court, they're to be as mean as a junkyard dog. And my daughter plays a post, and underneath there, she's to make those other people sorry that they're even around her. And yet at the same time, somebody falls down, pick them up, congratulate them after the game, play as hard as she can as under the Lord. And that's what athletics is about. That's what you're supposed to do. That's where your witness is to do the very best you can on that football field, basketball court, softball, baseball, diamond, track, hockey rink, whatever it may be. Nor is this talking about the victory that we have in the military. I can't imagine any of our current military leaders telling any of our soldiers in Iraq or Iran going out there. I mean, Iraq, hopefully not Iran yet, we may be, but Iraq or Afghanistan. Well, guys, don't worry about it. If you go out there and get killed, we'll just ship your body back. Just do the best you can. Go out there and have a good day. I don't see them saying that. They're teaching them, when you go out there, for the purpose to kill the enemy. You debilitate the enemy. You use everything you can. That's what it's about. And if they're wounded, then you do everything you can to help them. I tell folks that if Muslims started up our street, I would get every gun I have at every window I have and kill every one of them I could before they got to me. And then afterwards, I'd go out and do everything I could to help restore them, those who are alive, if I've survived. That's not the kind of victory this is talking about. The victory that's being described here, the love of victory here, is for my ego. Pure, unadulterated egotism. Look what it's saying there. There arose a dispute among them as to which of them should be considered the greatest. Let's put it this way. Let me translate it in these terms. There arose also a love of egotistical victory among them as to which of them should be considered the greatest. That makes a little more sense, doesn't it? Now, here's what I discovered as I was reading this. All of a sudden, it became very clear to me that my life has in large part been consumed with seeking my own significance, or finding my own significance, if you will. And much of that significance had to do with how, in my mind, I thought I was appearing to others by what I said or by what I did. And when you're driven by that, ladies and gentlemen, that's not freedom. That's enslavement. That is enslavement. Because no matter what you do, no matter what you say, it's never going to be enough, is it? You get to a place you think, oh, now this is really going to make me significant in their eyes. This is really going to, they're going to really think I'm the best thing since sliced bread. And then all of a sudden somebody else comes along, a peer in the same field you're in or whatever, and they do something or say something. Everybody's attention is toward them, and you're just down the tubes emotionally, aren't you? And what does that engender in you? What does that engender in you? Jealousy, resentment, bitterness, anger. How many of you like to be ruled by those emotions? Anybody? How many of you realize that's enslavement? How many of you want to be free from that? Yeah. See, that's an enslavement. It's like an addiction. It's like an addiction to alcohol, drugs, or any other such physical addiction. That is an emotional addiction that does not let you go. Because we are trying to measure our worth by what we, in fantasy, think others are thinking of us if we do this and do that. We think, they think, looking at us, and they think, I'm great. They think this and that and the other. Now, I know this is going to be a shock to many of you. Get ready to hold on to your seat. Are you ready? Because this is going to be a shock. As much as you think other people are thinking about you, about what you say and do, and they're just totally engrossed with you and just overwhelmed by you, I know this is going to be a shock to you, but you know who they're mostly focused on? Themselves. You say, well, how can that be? I am me. How can they be thinking about themselves more than they're thinking about me? Because I'm the center of the universe. Everything focuses on me. I do. Certainly everybody else should as well, right? I know that's a shock to you. But that really is the case. And so what we find is we're living in a fantasy world. A fantasy world of enslavement, of emotional enslavement. Something that God never really intended. He wants to set you free. Now, I often say this, that the Bible is a book of psychology, but it's biblical psychology. It's based on the premise of our total, absolute, utter corruption. Okay? Worldly psychology, on the other hand, is based on the premise that we're basically good and we can extricate ourselves from any problem. And all we have to realize is the real me. The real me. And I come to find out the real me, and I realize that I'm just good, and I'm great, and I'm wonderful, and I'm all these kinds of things. But the problem is, that kind of realization is so shallow and so temporal and so fragile. But once you get to that place, you guard it tenaciously. And so therefore, you can't handle any criticism. You can't handle anything that's real about you because you built up this false premise of who you think you are. And who you think you are is who you think other people think you are as well. But it's a fantasy world. And all of a sudden, bam! The reality that you're not that. And you become like a raging animal that's cornered. You attack anybody that comes and challenges this view of who you think you are. You can't receive criticism. You can't receive the truth about yourself. You're enslaved even more so. How many of you enjoy that? How many of you experience that? How many of you want to be set free from that? Yeah. Well, this is what Jesus came to do, to set you free from that lie and from that deception. Jesus went on to say, the kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and those who exercise authority over them are called benefactors. They're called benefactors. Now, this is a very interesting passage here, this verse here, because what Jesus is saying is that in the world, this is the way the world operates. The world's whole means of operation is one-upmanship. Okay? This carries over into business, carries over into politics, education, everything. Carries over in your personal life and family, neighbors, everybody. One-upmanship. Now, please understand, Jesus the Bible, the other writers of the New Testament, the Old Testament, in no way, shape, form, or fashion are ever presenting the idea that God is encouraging you to be a big couch potato. Okay? There's nothing beneficial about being lazy and slovenly. Nothing. In Colossians chapter 3, verses 23 and 24, if you want to look over there with me just for a minute. Paul's writing there, and basically he is reiterating what Jesus is saying here, but doing it in a little bit different fashion. He says, "And whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to man, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ." He's saying that whatever you do, do it with 110% involvement. But you do it as unto the Lord. You don't do it as unto men, because from Jesus you're going to receive the reward of inheritance. If you and I are doing what we're doing to be seen and recognized and honored by men, and thereby receive our sense of identity, our sense of worth, our sense of being in existence, then eventually you're going to be a very disillusioned, discouraged, despondent, bitter, angry, cynical, resentful person, aren't you? And self-pity is going to rule and control your life. Why? Because you're going to experience inequity and unfairness. How many of you ever experienced inequity and unfairness in your life? You've gone out there, you've worked hard in your job, you've worked hard in your school, you've worked hard in your sports, you've worked hard in whatever it is you're involved in, you've really done it well, and all of a sudden you see somebody who is being favored, who is being recognized, a peer for work, that they really haven't done that well, and you've done it better than they have, but for some reason the boss or the teacher or the coach or whoever is favoring them. Now, what emotions do you go through when that happens? Jealousy, bitterness, anger, disillusionment, mad at God, I'm going to give up and quit, this is no way, cynical. And let me ask you this, how many of you would say, you know what, that is such a wonderful place to be. I love bitterness and cynicism and anger and resentment and depression and sadness. It is so great, I just want to testify about it. I don't think so. And so what we begin to realize and see is that those emotions come from our own corruption. But they don't bring us freedom. They bring us further enslavement, don't they? They debilitate us. But that's the real world, isn't it? That is the real world. And so Paul is saying here, as well as Jesus is saying, he's saying whatever you do, do it from deep within, giving 100% effort as unto the Lord, not as unto men, because it's going to be from the Lord you're going to receive the reward of inheritance. All of you have seen and recognized in the world, it's full of inequity and unfairness. Because other people are just like you. They're as blind and short-sighted as you are. There can be injustice. There's politics in everything. Everything. Politics is there. Right? Now, you can become cynical or you can become a realist and realize, hey, Lord, I'm doing this as unto you. Now, I'm not talking about you living with rose-colored glasses and walking along with your feet off the ground and that type of thing. I'm not talking about that at all. Because no matter how close we get to the Lord, our carnal self, these are emotions that are so susceptible to the lies and the deception of the enemy. You're going to be dealing with that the rest of your life as long as you breathe. But Jesus has a way here to give you victory. And again, this is not woo-woo stuff, folks. This is reality. I'm not a woo-woo person. Woo-woo theology is woo-woo, you know, stuff that kind of like that doesn't have anything to do with where we really are. But turn back over to Luke, if you would. So we begin to realize that this love of victory is the love of me promoting me for the sake of me before others. But it's based on fantasy. The fantasy is if I do this and say this, if I dress this way, if I talk that way, if I wear my hair this way, if I wear this suit that way, if I do such, if I wear this shirt, if I, you know, whatever it may be, then I am going to really be something in the eyes of others, because I think I'm something in my own eyes. And really, the only person we're impressing is ourselves. Now, without question, we can do things that are impressive. But I say to you again, if you're doing it simply for the fact of you trying to find significance in your own mind by thinking now I am significant in the minds of others, you are enslaved and not set free. This is all the world knows. We recently bought a new car for my daughter, one of my daughters, and in the process of going to different car dealerships, most of them were very, you know, they're there, our product is the best, and come on, we have a deal, what do you want? And you know, I understand all that. That's part of the game, and if you're a car dealer, I understand what you're going through. And your whole deal is to present your product to convince the customer that your product is the best product out there, and if he leaves your store, he's missing the best deal he's ever had in his life, and that's what you're supposed to do. But there's a right way to do it, and there's a wrong way to do it. And most of the guys we went to, you know, they did it the right way. They took our credit, and God's blessed us to have good credit, and we would always tell them that, and they would examine it, and they'd say, okay, now, so we would start dealing and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Until we went to this one dealership. And what I'm telling you now is practical, everyday, rubber-hitting-the-road reality. This is how this is not just some esoteric doctrine out here. It doesn't have anything to do with practicality. It deals with everyday living. Here's a car dealer. He's trying to make a sale. And what motivated this gentleman was fear. Another element that Satan uses quite effectively in our lives is fear. Fear. If you don't know Jesus, that's all you have is fear to rule your life. If you are a Christian, here's what Satan's going to do, is going to come and lie to you and tell you, you can't expect God to really help you in this, can you? I know what the Bible says, but you don't really believe that, do you? That's stupid. Nobody believes that. Hey, if you're going to survive, you better take the bull by the horns. You better begin to take charge of this situation. You're going to go down the tube. You think God's going to help you? You're crazy. And so Satan comes and lies to you as a believer, and you embrace that lie through fear, and he turns you every way but loose. Every way but loose. He comes and attacks you where you have the greatest area of vulnerability. And he doesn't let go, does he? And that fear drives you, even as a Christian, to compromise, to lie, to cheat, whatever, because he's saying you can't really believe God. He's coming at you at the area of your sense of survival, your very sense of survival, your very sense of existence. That's what he's doing. And so as this guy kept pressuring me, and he wouldn't do my credit report unless I promised that I would buy the car from him. I said, what? I said, no, I'm not going to tell you that I'll buy this car. I said, I want to see what you have, but you can. Well, back and forth. I said, look, he was really trying to, you know, pressure me and intimidate me. I said, look, sir, I am not intimidated. And I said, I do not respond to this kind of pressure, but thank you so much. May God bless you. And we get up to walk off and leave. And no, I'm not saying. I said, well, yes, you are. And so I went ahead and walked out the door. And the other young man, this was the manager, the other young man was a Christian. I told him, I said, son, what you just saw is how not to do business. But you see, this man was ruled by fear. This young Christian guy was in there. This is the example that was being set before him. And he didn't know any better. But I was telling him, I said, this is not the way, because you just lost me as a customer. I will not be back in here. And so we see that it has very real consequences when we're motivated and ruled by that, or when we're trying to find our significance in our mind, by being significant in the minds of others. It always leads to compromise. It always leads to us trying to promote ourselves, and that always leads to enslavement and an addiction that no matter how much recognition you may receive, it will never, ever be enough. Isn't that amazing? An alcoholic is the same way. Some way on drugs, it's never enough, is it? Never enough. Now, Jesus, on the other hand, gives us His means of cure. But it is radical. But not so among you. On the contrary, he who is greatest among you, let him be as the younger, and he who governs as he who serves. Wow. Now, let's say, how many of you folks in here are in sales, involved in sales of some type? A few of you, okay. Let's say this is a sales fraternity. They're going to adopt, you know, they're going to have a sales fraternity. Everybody in sales, it doesn't matter what kind, but you're in sales. They're going to have this, you know, club that salespeople join. Now, they're going to elect a guy who's going to be the president. Do you think, here you have two different guys. You have one guy who's been in sales for 25 years, very successful, made a lot of money, and knows the product, knows how to sell. He's been in different types of companies, but he knows the ins and outs of sales, of how to market a product, of how to go and look at the clientele, your customers and different groups and areas and what they need and so forth and so on. Versus you have a guy that's just come out of college with a business degree and he's been in sales for 2 years. Of those two people, which do you think would be the most, as far as the eyes of others, who would be the most significant and who do you think would be elected president? The guy who's been doing it for 25 years, right? The guy who's been in it 2 years, you recognize him, we respect him, but he's really not significant in the minds of others. This other guy is the more significant one, and he's the one who would be put up as a president, if you will, of this organization. Now, what does that mean for you and me? Well, let me just tell you what Jesus is saying. He's saying for you to truly find real significance, for you to come to that place where you really find your identity, your true identity, it's going to be as you seek to be as the guy who's only been in it for 2 years. In other words, as you seek insignificance, then you're going to really find significance. That's the absolute antithesis of what we're taught, isn't it? The enslavement to get ahead. How far ahead have you gotten by doing that? Huh? How far ahead have you gotten by doing that? You think about it. Think about these athletes who are incredible, they're competitive, but they're striving for significance in their own mind. And many of them have resorted to steroids and enhancing, producing drugs. Many of them have been eliminated. Isn't that tragic? You see, that's the result of so desperately wanting significance that they're worshiping that. Really, what they're doing is worshiping themselves because they want to be worshiped. This whole drive for significance, I call it self-deification. When you go back and read in Genesis chapter 3, when Eve was tempted by Satan, what she was tempted with is, Satan said, if you'll eat this fruit, you will be like God, knowing good and evil. You're going to be just like God. You're going to be a deity. Well, of course, she did eat, and the very opposite happened. She and Adam, and interestingly enough, their eyes were not open until they both ate. But rather than them being like God, they all of a sudden saw their depravity. They saw their nakedness, and they tried to hide themselves, and they couldn't do it. But that has been a lie that has been perpetrated ever since mankind's been on this earth, that we can be our own God. It's amazing, too, when I've ever confronted liberals in a scholarly setting and we've ever discussed Genesis, most of them look at Genesis as myth. And rather than trying to get into all the arguments about that, because, you know, they don't listen, I always go to the emotions. I go to the emotions. And I go to this whole idea here of significance, just like we're talking about. I go to the whole idea of deification. I go to the whole idea of jealousy and all that. And some of these guys are very bitter people, very cutthroat people. Some of them are very kind people, but many of them are cutthroat. And you realize they're enslaved, you see. But listen, here's what Jesus is saying. He's saying if you really want to find true significance in your life, if you really want to find wholeness in your life, then I want you to seek, rather than being significant, rather than doing and saying those things whereby you think this is going to really make me significant in the eyes of others, I want you to do just the opposite. I want you to do what you think is going to make you insignificant. But once again, let me strongly exhort you, this is not meaning I want you to be a lazy couch potato. He's simply saying, I'm wanting you to redirect your energies versus trying to be significant in your mind and the minds of others. I want you to do what you do is unto me completely, and I'm going to give you the reward of the inheritance. Don't worry about trying to impress man, because men are going to overlook you. You do what you do is unto me. And as you do it unto me, I will bless you. The first time I ever learned that lesson, I didn't even fully comprehend it. I look back now and I see this is what God was sharing me. I was in college and came back and was at Mississippi State playing ball. And we were playing the University of Florida down in Jackson, Mississippi. And we had a goal line stand, and I had a stunt, and I broke through between the guard and the tackle, and the back came up and I reared up like that, and the guy hit me in the head, and boom, I was out. I went off on the sidelines. Well, that set off a series of things. And anyway, it ended up developing a peptic ulcer because I ate this bunch of grapes. And anyway, just to make a long story, that's what happened. And so here I was with this head like this. And the following week, we played Texas Tech out in Lubbock. And coach put me in there in the game to play. And I didn't know which end was up. I was so dizzy, I couldn't, I didn't know if I had a concussion. They later on found out it was an ulcer thing. So for the next few weeks, a couple of games after that, I didn't do that well, and I was very disappointed, very discouraged. Felt like quitting. Really, I said, oh, this... But all of a sudden, the Lord gripped me, and He said, Justin, this is not about you. That was one of the first times He ever said that to me. This is not about you. It's all about me. And I realized, Lord, I'm not here playing for me. I'm playing for you. And I went out there, and His strength... And practice and the games, and it was amazing. I never will forget, we were playing Auburn, and I made these incredible tackles and all kinds of stuff, and I don't know how it happened. I got knocked on my back a lot of times too, but it was just incredible. And then in other games, stuff would happen like that. At the end of that year, and I went out there, listen, every day in practice, I went out there in weakness, in my weakness, but looking to the Lord and His strength. At the end of that year, I was selected to the Southeastern Conference All-Sophomore football team. And when I saw that thing, I said, God, I don't deserve this. And you know what the Lord said? You're right. You absolutely don't. So I didn't give this to you because you deserved it. I gave it to you because I'm going to use you. Well, see, there was a situation. I was just hanging on. I was just doing it under the Lord because I thought I was the sixth thumb on a hand. I thought I was just nothing. But in my weaknesses, I went out unto the Lord. I wasn't seeking recognition from anybody. I was just trying to get by. I was trying to do what God had given me to do. And God did that. Are you with me? Now, let me tell you what happened as a result of that. He opened up doors for me to go and share the gospel throughout the entire Southeast. I literally saw hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of kids come to Christ. It's incredible. But then on the other hand, I've seen in my life where I would do things where I was so desperate to be noticed and recognized. So desperate. Not even realizing that thing was controlling me. Seeking to be significant in the minds of others by trying to achieve certain things. And no matter how much you attain, it never is enough. It enslaves you. It's an incredibly enslaving thing. Sir, can I borrow you for just a minute? And your name is?
Larry.
Brother Larry, I'm Justin Alfred, sir.
All right.
Good. Now, stand right here just for a minute. Face me. Now, I'm going to show you something. A picture's worth 1,000 words. And here's how Satan does. He knows where you and I are the most vulnerable and the most susceptible to his lies. He knows where he can come and attack you with feelings of insignificance and worthlessness. And you start clamoring like you're drowning physically, you're drowning emotionally. You say, no, I am worth something, I am somebody. And you start clawing and scraping and everything else, right? You start trying to impress people. You start out of jealousy. You start doing all this and you're not free. You're enslaved, aren't you? Huh? Now, I'm going to give you a representation of what happens here. Now, Brother Larry is going to come, and I want you to come in like you're going to choke me. This is a martial arts move, and I'm just going to show. But I'm going to show you how this works. Now, this really does work. Okay, so just come like you're just going to choke me. Duh! Now, here's what I did. I came up. As he came to choke me, I came right through that underneath, hit him in the nose, and then I grabbed his hair. I just let your neck be loose. Okay. Now, watch this. See, I've already softened him up. If I just went to grab his hair here, he would grab me and do all kinds of things, but that's the way Satan does. So he doesn't come and say, hey, I'm going to enslave you and drag you down to the bottom. You say, well, no, you're not. But what he does, then he comes in that area and challenges your sense of being. So now I've hit him in the nose, shocked him, I grabbed him by the hair, and now watch what I'm going to do to him from his point forward. Here, 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 here. Thank you very much, sir. Now, that's what the enemy does, figuratively speaking. Are you with me? You control somebody's head like that, you can take him anywhere you want to. Now, in our training, we teach people if you're ever grabbed by the hair in the front like that, we teach them how to get out of it. And how you get out of it is, first of all, is you grab them by the hand. You do a roll and then you kick them where they're going to be completely debilitated. And you get out of it. Now I'm going to show you how Jesus wants you and me to get out of that. As we talked about the sales person, Jesus is saying, I'm wanting you to seek insignificance versus significance. That's exactly what he's saying here. The way you're going to get out of that trap and that enslavement is you go with it. Satan hits you. All of a sudden you feel pressured. You're in a group of business guys or a group of women, and you hear them. One comes in with this dress, and all the jealousy and all the insecurity, ladies, in your life just comes to the surface, and you start bad mouthing. Well, I bet that's fake, or I bet this is that, and I bet so forth. And the reason you do that is because you feel threatened, you see. And so then you start trying to present yourself and saying things to tear that person down in order that your own ego is built up, whereby you thinking, I am the greatest, right? I am superior to that person because of this, that, and the other. Am I right? Now, does that set you free? Does that enslave you? Slaves you, doesn't it? Just like guys, I was in Sarasota, Florida two weeks ago, and speaking down there and teaching, and I went to work out at this Gold's Gym during the daytime. The one guy who owned it, he was a Christian. We got talking. He said, yeah. I said, tell me, they have a convention every year, and he says, it's amazing. You go there, and you see these hot shots come in there, and they talk, man, we're doing this, and we're doing that. We're greatest. We're all this. He said, you go back a year or two later, you don't even see them. And I said, you know what? And I just talked with him about this passage. I said, that's what this is like, isn't it? You have these guys there who are so desperate to be significant in their own mind, in the minds of others. Are you with me? So they're bragging about themselves. They're bragging about their gym. They're bragging about how much they're bragging. And all of it's just hot air because they're trying to find significance in their mind by making themselves significant in the minds of others, they think. And it's a fantasy. And then lo and behold, they're not even there. Jesus went on in the next verse. Look at this. He who is greater, for who is greater? He who sits at the table or he who serves? Is it not he who sits at the table? Yet I am among you as the one who serves. Whoa! Folks, this is pretty radical. Here's what Jesus is saying. You go to a banquet and you see a guy at the head table and everybody knows who this is. He's very significant. The waiters, you don't even notice them. In fact, they come and bring food in and out and you just talk as though they're non-existent. Many years ago, when Governor Reagan was running for the presidency against Gerald Ford that first time, we were honored to go and ask to be there and to give an invocation. Jack, I forget the other gentleman's name, was there too. An incredible blessing. He signed a little picture for us. But you know what? I wasn't significant. People could have cared less who I was, this little preacher from down in South Louisiana. And, well, them Cajun people told like this, you know, and they eat them crawfish and suck them heads. They could have cared less about me. But you know what? Even less than me were the waiters. The waiters were just basically non-existent. The focus of attention was on Ronald Reagan. Now, Jesus is saying something here that's so incredibly powerful. He's saying, I am one of those waiters. Jesus is fully God and He's fully man. The man Jesus was saying, I don't need to be seen and recognized by men for the sake of me to know who I am and find my true identity. My will is to do the will of the Father. That is my meat. Remember, they said, oh, aren't you hungry, Lord? He says, no, I have meat that you don't even know about. And that feeds me is doing the will of my Father. That is my meat. I never understood that until now. Never understood that. It's a major breaking process that God has to take us through. But Jesus is saying, now understand this, ladies and gentlemen, Jesus is the creator of the world. Are you with me? The creator of the world. And yet in John's Gospel chapter 1, the world didn't even know Him. They spit at Him. But look what happened at the end. Philippians chapter 2 verse 7 says, Jesus made Himself of no reputation, and yet God gave Him a reputation, whereby every knee will bow and every tongue will confess that He is Lord. Is that incredible or what? Listen to me. This world that we live in is a corrupt, gut-wrenching, life-sucking, deceptive place. I don't understand the mystery of iniquity, but I know it's there. But here's what I do know. This is truth. Now, I want to lay it out in very practical terms for you of how God has made this real for me. He's made this real for me by showing me that when I get into a situation, I'm with other people. And I hear other people talking about themselves or saying things. And within me comes that same desire, this love of the victory of my ego and being superior to somebody else so that I will be the greatest. That's what this is. That's what the word dispute means. That's what the love of victory there is. And I find, here I'm in a situation, people are talking. And I find myself wanting to, yeah, well, you know, well, I did this and I did that and I was here and I was. Why am I wanting to say that? I'm pushed. I'm prompted. Oh, you better say this. You better let them know that you're as great as they are. You better let them know how good you are, because if you don't, you're going to be an oblivious twit. Huh? You ever heard that little voice? But that's a lie. I've learned to do just the opposite. I've learned to keep my mouth shut. Now listen to me. As I keep my mouth shut, the emotional pressure inside of me is boiling. Are you with me? It's boiling. And Satan is screaming at me, you better do this! If you don't, you're a nothing. You're flushed down the toilet. You're oblivious. Nobody cares who you are. Nobody even knows you exist. Am I right? You ever heard that pressure? I've learned that's the lie. Everything that Satan does, that the root of every temptation we have is fear. The fear is I cannot trust God, because if I do, I'm going to be oblivious. I'm going into oblivion. I won't survive. And so therefore, he attacks us with that. We embrace that lie through fear. We're yanked around just like I did Brother Larry here. And he takes us wherever he wants to go. We're not free. But I've learned, ladies and gentlemen, amidst that intense pressure, amidst the screaming, amidst the fears that come in, I've learned, number one, whatever Satan tries to get me to do through fear, I stop and say, wait a minute, why am I wanting to do this? and I go backwards. I'm wanting to do it because of this, because of this, because of this, and it gets to the root because I don't believe God will do what He says. I've done that too many times. I've been like the children of Israel. I say, no way. I'm not going there. I'm going to do just the opposite, Lord. I'm not going to have my action, attitude motivated by fear and be enslaved. Secondly, as He's trying to make me do something where by my mind, out of fear, I'm saying something or doing something whereby I think now I'm going to be significant. That's a fantasy. It is an absolute fantasy. I stop and I say, I'm going to do just the opposite. Now, let me tell you what you go through, at least what I go through. As I pass through that first veil of fear, I come into what I call a state of emotional nothingness. See, fear and insecurity and self-pity, those are such strong emotions that we feel them. They're very strong. We're used to them. We're familiar with them, but they're debilitating things. We've had five daughters. I never learned how to make boys, but we have five precious girls. And all but one of our girls, all but one of them love pacifiers. And our oldest daughter loved pacifier. And I never forget, she was about 3.5 years old. We were coming from we lived down in South New Orleans in a place called Burris. Anybody from down South Louisiana, that area here? Nobody. Well, anyway, we were going from New Orleans down. It was about 60 miles. And so we said, Amy, don't you want to get rid of a pappy? That's what we call it, the pappy. She said, okay, Daddy. So she rolled the window and we said, throw it out and say, bye-bye, pappy, bye. So she did that. She bye-bye, pappy. About 30 miles down the road, she starts crying for pappy. We said, don't you remember? You threw it away. So she went through a few days of withdrawal. Now, let me ask you something. How much did that pacifier, how much nutritional value was she receiving from that pacifier? Not a bit. But it was an emotional thing, you see. And so what I'm saying to you, these feelings are emotional things that don't bring security, but we're familiar with them, aren't we? Fear being one of them. So when you begin to set that aside and say, no, Lord, I'm going to trust you. Believe me now, this is what you're going to go through. You're going to go through a period of what I call emotional nothingness. You're not going to feel anything. And then He's going to try to come and frighten you with that. And then you're going to try to make yourself feel something. Don't do that either. What God is doing is freeing you from being ruled by your carnal, deceptive, lying emotions. Are you with me? It is a process. I would be lying if I were to tell you it's easy. The easy thing is to give in to fear, to give in to self-pity, and to stay balled up and ruled and controlled by the hair. Now, one of the things we do in one of the styles of jiu-jitsu, martial arts I do in jiu-jitsu, is we do fingertip push-ups like that. Now, ma'am, ask me if that's easy. No, just ask me, is it easy? No, it's not easy at all. Larry, ask me, is it hard and does it hurt? Yes, it does. It's both. It is hard and it does hurt. Now, let's see. And Miss asked me, what is your name? Yeah. Asked me, can I learn to do that though? Without question, you can. Now, Miss asked me, but is it easy? No. Those are all honest answers. You can learn to do it. I've seen women do it, but is it easy? No. I've seen guys do it. There's nothing easy about it. Start off, your hands flat like this. And for girls, they just do women push-ups on their knees. And then they finally just begin to grow, you know, go up like this on their hands. And then finally, they get to where they do one finger at a time like that. Slowly but surely. Listen to me. Your victory in this area is going to be like that. How many of you have seen Bowflex advertised on TV? This is not Bowflex Christianity. Now, the guy and the gal that they have on Bowflex advertising that, together, combined, they probably have less than 10% body fat, don't they? Huh? Do you know how they got to looking like that? I guarantee it wasn't by using Bowflex. Now, you may have Bowflex, and that's okay. But you're not going to look like that by using Bowflex. That's a lie. Now, they got looking like that by going to a gym, working out intensely on free weights, primarily some machines, doing a very intense aerobic conditioning where they sweat and they hurt and they breathe really hard. And they go beyond where they want to go. And they do it by consistently doing it. Not just one day a week. I mean, they're in there 3-4 times a week consistently. When they don't even want to, they don't like doing it, they don't want to do it, but they know the results and the benefits of doing it, and they press on beyond that. And the last thing is assiduously watching their diet. They see all of those things is what it takes to get that way. Is it hard? Is it no. Is it easy? Is it hard? Yes. Is it easy? No. Can it be done? Yes. That's just something in the natural. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about something here of even far greater value, and that is the spiritual health that God wants to give you. And so as you pass through that emotional nothingness, believe me, it's going to be scary. Because it's a place you haven't been before. But as you begin to get used to it, as you begin to practice this, as you begin to walk in this liberating truth, you're going to experience real victory and real freedom. My wife and I were talking about this last night and this morning, about stoicism. Philosophy, I love philosophy. I majored in that in college and had a double major in history and philosophy, and I love to read it. The Stoics were people who understood this incredible enslavement to their emotions. The Buddhists understand this. In fact, when you look at the 8-step plan of Buddhism, that's what it's all about. It's trying to escape this emotional enslavement. The Stoics thought they needed to do this, but what they ended up doing was the apex of self-pity. They don't allow themselves to feel anything, and they become hardened, self-centered and self-focused people, really encased by self-pity. Don't even realize it. See, you cannot humanly escape those emotions in your own strength. Worldly psychology tries to get you to do it. You can't. You end up believing the lie. You say, I'm wonderful, I'm great, I'm sweet, I'm precious, I'm all these wonderful things. And any criticism that comes along, you end up rejecting it. See? So Jesus is saying this is the way you're going to find it. So you pass through that area of what I call emotional nothingness. And as you come to that place where you feel nothing, and your flesh is screaming out, you've got to have something. You know, it's like a free fall. It's like falling free fall from an airplane with a parachute, and the parachute hasn't opened yet. That's where you are emotionally, is in this free fall. But let me tell you something. You're right in the hands of God. But God is wanting to liberate you and set you free from this prison and this enslavement to these carnal, deceptive, life-sucking emotions that don't give you life but take life from you. As you come out on the other end of that, all of a sudden you're going to begin to realize and you're going to begin to hear the voice of God's Spirit clearly, more clearly than you ever have before. You're going to begin to realize, Lord, His Word is true. I can stand on that, period. It is my foundation. It is a supernatural thing that transcends the intellect and intellectual acumen or anything else. Are you with me? It transcends all of that. It's very real. But ladies and gentlemen, I want to tell you something. There is a price. And we find it in Luke 9, 23 and 24. And we're going to finish up with that. Then He said to them all, Luke chapter 9, verses 23 and 24, if anyone wishes, anyone desires to come after Me, let him deny himself. What? Deny myself? What do we see the world telling us today if we're going to find identity and purpose and fulfillment? It's not self-denial. What is it? Consume everything upon on every lust of the flesh you have, right? It's all about who? You. It's all about me. Not self-denial, but grabbing everything I can that makes me feel good, right? And when that happens, you become an incredibly selfish, self-centered, self-focused person who's going to be ruled by self-pity when things don't go your way exactly. What a hellish way to live. If anyone comes after Me, let him deny himself. Let her deny himself. Now, believe me, this is not going to be a warless effort. Satan's going to battle you every step of the way. Are you with me? We become Bowflex Christians. We're always looking for the easy way out, aren't we? We're looking for the quick, easy fix. There is no quick, easy fix in this, ladies and gentlemen. Just like there isn't any quick, easy fix in getting in shape either, for that matter, either. But it's a lie. We tend to fall into it. And people come and offer you alternatives like this. Not like this, but that you can attain spiritual maturity with ease and comfort. No pain, you know. Not true. And take up his cross daily. Ooh. Means all day during the day. Not just once a day, but all day during the day. You see, this death is going to have to occur, first of all, then the life's going to be there. You're going to have to go through pain. If you don't want pain, then your Satan's going to rule you through the fear of pain. Are you with me? See? And you're going to be enslaved, and you're going to be going in the downward spiral rather than in the upward ladder that God's given us. And then follow me. See, as I said, as you pass through this place called emotional nothingness, you're going to come out on the other end realizing that the emotions are no longer controlling and dominating. They're going to still be there. And all of a sudden, you're going to begin to hear with clarity the voice of God's Spirit. Now, the way you're going to hear that is because you're reading His Word. There is no substitute for this. As great a teacher and preacher as Jack Hibbs is, I love him dearly, a great man of God. Just listening to him is not going to be sufficient. Chuck Smith, Billy Graham, these men can't believe for you. I can't. You're going to have to open this and begin to ingest it for yourself. It's like if you came and watched me do martial arts, and that's all you did, just watch me do it. Oh, isn't that great? That's really great. And all of a sudden, you get in a situation, you have to defend yourself. Well, let's see what Justin did. And you start doing this, and they eat you up and spit you out. Why? Because all you did was sit there and watch somebody do it. You never did practice it yourself. Are you with me? Now look what he says in verse 24. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake will save it. So many times I've seen people who wanting life, but they try to find it by saving themselves through fear and not giving themselves up to the Lord and letting fear rule their life, and they end up losing the very thing they're trying to take hold of. Isn't that incredible? So Jesus is saying to you and me today, your significance is going to be found as you seek to be insignificant. Whatever your flesh is telling you to do to find significance in, you do just the opposite. And you're going to have those emotional, you're going to go through that battle. The fear is going to attack you. You're going to go through that period of emotional nothingness. But ladies and gentlemen, you're going to find God's peace. And you're going to find His victory and His fulfillment. Let's pray. Father, we really thank You for this wonderful time today. And thank You for these precious saints. And Lord, we just ask that You would take this, Your Word, minister its life to these, Your sheep. And Lord, just continue to draw us all closer and closer to You, we ask in Jesus' name. Amen.